Okay, so the first program speaker is a, this is a topic I always seem to get to preside over the history stuff. We have Gabe Selak, who is the public programs manager of the San Diego History Center, and he tells me he started out as a monorail driver, and he moved up through the ranks. He's going to talk to us about the history of the area and of Del Mar in particular. So I'm looking forward to hearing about that. So can we welcome Gabe Selak?
Thank you, everyone. It's my pleasure to come out and talk to you today a little bit about our region's history. Just a real quick show of hands, how many people are actually from Southern California? Lots of you are. All right. I just wanted to get a sense of where you may have come from, because I'm actually not originally from California or from San Diego. I came from Pennsylvania, and then I moved to Boston for a few years before I moved out here. But I come from San Diego History Center. We are a repository for the history of our region, and our collection encompasses a tremendous amount of material dedicated to our past here. Some of that information I'm going to share with you today. But let me just tell you a little bit about the History Center and chance you have an opportunity to go there. We are located in Balboa Park, and we are located in a building called the Casa de Balboa. It is the same building that houses the Model Railroad Museum and the Museum of Photographic Arts. So if you're looking for us, that's where you'll find us in Balboa Park. Our collection, though, encompasses 2.5 million photographs. It's one of the largest photograph collections west of the Mississippi. And it encompasses whenever San Diego County included several other counties around us, like Imperial County and places like that. We have a document collection, like marriage records and court records and deeds and scrapbooks and all sorts of ephemera, things that were created for special events around the community. Our document collection is about 45 million sheets of paper. Yeah, and if we were to line everything side by side, it's about 4 miles of documents. So it's a tremendous amount of paper that we have in our holdings. We also have an object collection, household items, and things that have been used by people in San Diego over the years. Some large-scale objects that we have at the History Center include a Model T Ford that was came to San Diego in 1921. It still has its original paint job. Yeah, it's amazing. The woman who owned it, her name was Florence Newkirk, and she was a Olympic swimmer, and she won a gold medal in 1924 in the Olympics. But her parents, they bought her this car, and she drove it around for a little while, but after a time she decided that she wanted to keep it in good condition, and so she put it into a barn in their property in East County, and it basically it would only come out for parades and things, but all the rest of the time it was stored in this barn. So it's in impeccable condition, and as I mentioned, has its original paint job. We also have a streetcar that used to run up and down one of our major streets in San Diego, Park Boulevard, and that is inside of our building. When they built our building, they actually had to put it inside with a crane to get it inside of the building. But lots and lots of objects that just tell you the history of our community and treasured possessions that people have had that they think, and we agree, tell a wonderful side of San Diego's past. But let me ask you this. If you would have come here in, let me reform the question. San Diego was actually established or first discovered in 1542 by a gentleman named Juan Rodriguez Cabrillo. And when he came here, he named this place something completely different than it is today. Anybody have an idea of what our city would be called if we would have kept the name that he gave us? Yes, I see over there to the left. That's right, San Miguel. We would have all be living in or traveling to the city of San Miguel. Usually the Spanish, as they would come to different ports, they would name the port closest to the saint's day of their arrival. They'd have a mass and that sort of thing. And when Cabrillo arrived in 1542, it was around the feast of San Miguel, or St. Michael, or San Miguel. So it was originally written down that our port would be San Miguel. took about 70 years or more, maybe I'm not so good with math, but in 1602, Sebastian Visciano comes here to San Diego, and at the time that he arrived, it was around the Feast of St. Didacus, or San Diego, and so the name was changed to San Diego, and it's been that way ever since. As for people living here in the region, native people have been here for thousands and thousands of years, long before the Europeans arrived. In fact, just a little bit to the east of here is a town called Rancho Santa Fe. And through archaeological evidence and digs that have been done in that particular location, they found that that is the first site that the native people settled in when they came across the land bridge, you know, the Bering Strait and things, and wandered their way down here. Rancho Santa Fe is the first place that they settled, and that was over 20,000 years ago. The more recent people are the San Diego or San Dieguito people, and they would have arrived here around 1,000 years ago. So native people have been in the region for thousands and thousands of years. The Europeans, of course, Juan Rodriguez Cabrillo and then Visciano, but the first families to live in the region started after the Sacred Expedition, which would have been Father Junipero Serra, you've probably heard that name around town, and Gaspar de Portola. Father Serra was responsible for converting all of the natives to Christianity and to setting up a series of missions. He would ultimately set up 9 of 21 missions here in Southern or Alta California. And alongside of him, they were setting up military outposts, and that's where Portola was responsible for. So he set up the fort, and then Father Serra took care of the religious orders. And that would have started in 1769. Now, San Diego has had many, many different changes. Lots of different cultures have laid claim to this particular region. Of course, the native people first. Then we have the Spaniards. Then we have the Mexican period, which would be in the 1820s through the 1840s. And during that time, San Diego really developed its first major industry. And that was the hide and tallow trade. So we had all these cows that were brought to the region when the Spaniards arrived here to work on the missions and things. But after Mexico declared independence from Spain, there wasn't a need for having those missions properties any longer. So the Mexican officials decided to divide out the land to give it to different householders. And that began our rancho period here in San Diego. Many of the places that are still place names today, cities that we have today, were formed during that ranch period. Places like Rancho Panasquitas, Rancho Bernardo, Rancho Jojome, Santa Margarita de la Flores, which is now Camp Pendleton. All of these places were once former mission lands that were converted to Mexican territory during the Mexican period. Now, the war of this Mexican-American War that happens in 1846, major battle is going to happen here in San Diego County. Anybody know what that battle is? Yeah. That's right, the Battle of San Pascual. Interesting story about that. So Stephen Kearney, who was the military officer responsible for the American forces, he was coming here from New Mexico. He was told by Robert Stockton, who was sort of the commander of San Diego at the time, he was told to come through San Pascual Valley and to do it rather secretively because they knew that the Mexican officials were around, and in particular, Andreas Pico, who was the leader of the Californios, and also Andreas Pico was Pio Pico's brother. Pio Pico is the last Mexican governor to roll over this territory. But Kearney was told to be very secretive about coming through because he didn't want to sort of get in any sort of battle on his way to San Diego. Well, he's journeying out, and he hears that there are these Californios in the valley, and he wants to know just how many people are actually there. So he sends a man named Gillespie, and there's an airfield named Gillespie Airfield around town, named after him. He sent Gillespie out to go and count these Californios. But Kearney told Gillespie, be very, very quiet. Don't make any noise. We don't need any battles or anything like that. So Archibald Gillespie goes out. He's very curious about what's going on. Just so happens, as they get close to the Californios, someone in his group rattles a saber. And so that wakes all the Californios up. Archibald Gillespie runs back to Kearney and says, oops, I made a little noise. And so Kearney at that point had no choice but to continue onward and push through the Californios. There was a major battle. It happened in December of 1846. And as a military battle for the United States, we actually really lost the battle. We lost about 20 men in that battle, whereas the Californios lost six. So from a military standpoint, we really lost. Robert Stockton, who was in Old Town at the time, he was at a fandango at the Bandini's house. He was at a big party. And he gets word from Kearney that he's having this trouble in San Pascual Valley. And so he sends someone to talk to Commodore Stockton. And he's like, okay, I'll send somebody. So he eventually sends some forces, and it puts the end to the battle. But it really is a major player in the Mexican-American War. Happened right here in San Diego. And from that point then, the United States took over this particular territory. And our downtown changed a lot. There's a gentleman who is the father of downtown San Diego. His name is Alonzo Horton. Get this, how much land he was able to buy for such a cheap price. To create our downtown, he bought 970 acres of land for 27 cents an acre. Yeah. Can you imagine how cheap? I mean, people were, he saw the vision of what our future could be here in San Diego, and he really wanted to have a major metropolis here, which we've turned out to be. We're the eighth largest city in the United States. But he saw the potential of that, and this is before the railroad actually got to San Diego. And I will get to the Del Mar story in just a minute, in case you're wondering where that fits into this. But Horton purchases 970 acres. He starts to build the downtown, and then the train, ultimately, there is a main direct train route to San Diego that is created, and the terminus of it will be at National City. At that point, people start to flood here to San Diego, and that's going to happen in 1885. Previous to that, all of our population in San Diego consisted of less than 3,000 people. Once we received a direct train route from the east, our population from 1885 to 1887 shot to 40,000 people. Yeah. The cost, now this is amazing to me too, the cost to get from Chicago to San Diego, first you would have to go to San Francisco because there was no direct train route in the 1870s. So you would take a train to San Francisco, and that would cost you $125. And then from there, you would take a sidewheeler, a paddle boat, which would bring you from San Francisco. Most people took the Orizaba. That's the name of the boat. It's kind of like the Mayflower of the West. You know, it really brought a lot of settlers here to San Diego. But the Orizaba brought people here, or the Senator. That was the other ship that brought a lot of people here. But it was $125 to get to San Diego in the 1870s. When the train finally arrives here, the price drops to $1. Yeah, so that's going to increase all of these people flooding out here. And the other thing that is being promoted at this time is, and the train companies are really using this to their advantage, they are promoting San Diego as the most healthy place in the country. Some of the advertisements that we have in our ephemera collection at the History Center say that directly. They say, doctors will find no employment here. It's just such a wonderful place to come and live. And so people are going to take that advice, and they're going to move out here. In places like Carlsbad, which is not very far from here, it's going to be set up as a sanitarium for people to come and drink the mineral water and get healthy. The Hotel Del Coronado, which is out on Coronado, another sanitarium. People are going to go there to get healthy. Rest Haven. There's lots and lots of that. I could go on for days about all these different preventatoriums and sanatoriums that were created for people who were living in the West or in the East that had consumption, or better known as tuberculosis. And the best thing for you to do when you have that those conditions is to get dry air. And of course, we have that here in San Diego. So people were coming out here in droves. And that's really how Del Mar got started, too. When the railroad finally came to San Diego, we first had it from, it came up from Yuma, Arizona, and across the southern route. Eventually, there was a route that was brought down from San Francisco. Oh, I should mention this to you too. You know, we're always as we're driving to Los Angeles or something, it's like 2 hours to get there, right? And everybody's like, oh my gosh, it takes forever to get there. In the time before the train arrived, it would take you 2 days to get to Los Angeles from here. Yeah, 2 days. By a stagecoach, it would take you 2 days. To get to San Francisco, it would take you 2 weeks. What's it take to drive there today? 7 hours. Yeah. So we've made some improvements, definitely, in our transportation getting here. Also, depending on how much you purchased or what level of passage you purchased on your stagecoach would also determine how comfortable your trip was. If you paid first-class passage, you got to stay inside the stagecoach no matter what happens, right? If you pay second-class passage, you are asked to get out and walk alongside of the stagecoach if there's any trouble. Yeah, what do you suppose happens if you play third-class passage? You have to get out and push. Yep, that's your job. So people are going to be striving, I think, to get that first-class passage as much as possible. But when the train arrives here, of course, it's going to change everything. And it's really going to help to develop Del Mar as well. There is a gentleman, his name was Theodore Loop. He was one of the investors in the Southern California Railroad, which was coming down from Los Angeles. And as he came past this area over and over again, he realized and even quotes it as being the most beautiful place in Southern California. So he decides to purchase 330 acres from a neighbor of his name Enoch Talbert. He purchases 330 acres for $1,000. And he sets up a little tent city, because that's really how a lot of our communities got started. Before hotels were built and houses were shipped around the Horn to come to San Diego and to Del Mar and places, people lived in tents for months at a time. But he decided to create a community here, and his wife was asked to name the town. And her name was Ella Loop. And she was reading a poem at the time that they were here. It was The Fight on Paseo del Mar. That's the name of the poem. It was a popular poem at that time. And she loved it so much that she chose Del Mar as the name of this community. So Loop and another gentleman a short time after, his name is Colonel Taylor. He was really quite prominent in developing towns. And Taylor in particular, saw Del Mar as a place for the rich and famous to come. And so he decided to hire another town planner who mostly worked in East County. His name is Ed Fletcher. There's a parkway named the Fletcher Parkway, named after Edward Fletcher. Edward Fletcher is also responsible for developing Grossmont, if you are familiar with that area. So Ed Fletcher and Taylor, they get together and they start to plan what Del Mar will look like. And it's very, very important that they attract the wealthy and they attract the rich and famous of Los Angeles and things, and also in the East. And so they decided that they are going to build a train station here in Del Mar, a very attractive train station. They're going to build a pier that goes and has a bathing pool that's out in the ocean, but it's enclosed. Because a lot of people didn't know very well how to swim in the 1880s and 90s. And if you ever have a chance to see pictures of the people going out and swimming at this time, there's ropes out in the water so that people could hold on to them because their clothing weighed so much. Their clothing was made of wool. And so, you know, if you're not a very good swimmer and you go out into the ocean in a wool costume, you can imagine you're going to sink pretty quickly. And so they have these ropes that go out into the ocean. But they decided to build an actual wading pool inside of the ocean, but it was an enclosed space. Because this time, too, the 1880s, is a time of change for people. They are loosening the restrictions of the Victorian era. Previous to this, it'd be really unlikely for men and women to be seen bathing on the beach together. Just something wouldn't have happened. there'd be men's sections and women's sections. But in the 1880s, there's a whole change of philosophy that the sea air is good, sea water is good for you, so you should spend as much time as you can, and why separate yourselves but socialize out together? And people who are sort of old standards, who lived during the time when it was men and women separated from each other, they were really quite shocked by that. And so the hotels that were built in this area, and one in particular here in Del Mar, it was the Casa Del Mar, later replaced by the Stratford Inn, which is in downtown Del Mar today. They had in their bathrooms, they had tubs that allowed for you to pour hot water, cold water, or seawater into your bathtub. So if you were, you couldn't fathom going out and being on the beach if you're a man and being on the beach with women or vice versa, you could still have that sea bath experience, but you do it in the privacy of your own bathroom at your hotel. And the Hotel Del Coronado was set up the same way. It had 400 rooms, 70 bathrooms, so you still had to share a bathroom with lots of different people, but it had hot water, cold water, and seawater so that you could have a private bath if you wanted. Now, I mentioned that they decided to build the hotel. The first one, the Casa Del Mar, it burned down, later replaced by the Stratford Inn that is there today. Once that was created, then they were able to added a plunge, which was a very popular pastime in the 1900s, to allow people to either go into the ocean if they wanted to, or could still have a freshwater experience as well. So really, that's how Del Mar gets started. What we're probably mostly knowing about Del Mar today is the horse races and things like that. Everybody's familiar with where the surf meets the turf, right? Anybody know who came up with that slogan? Bing Crosby, exactly. Yeah, we'll talk about him in just a minute. Really how the whole concept of the Del Mar racetrack started a little bit before that. In the 1880s, it was decided that California would start to have agricultural fairs. And the first one that was held in this region was in National City. It was the horticulture and agricultural display that was in 1880, and it was in National City. And after that, these sort of agricultural fairs were kept in different locations around the county. There, for a time, were in Escondido. There were some that were in downtown San Diego. Even Balboa Park, for a while, was the host of an agricultural state fair. But it was decided in the 1930s that we needed to have a permanent location in our county for a state fair, an agricultural fair. Now, there weren't an awful lot of animals, so it was primarily fruits and vegetables, as we are very well known here for our agriculture. And so it was decided to purchase a property. It was the old Del Mar Golf Course. It was purchased to become the headquarters or the home of the Del Mar Fair. And the first Del Mar Fair was held in October of, I'm losing the date, I'm sorry. It's in the 1930s that was finally here in Del Mar. But over a very short amount of time, less and less people were coming just to see the agricultural exhibits. And fortunately, when they built the Del Mar Fairgrounds, they did build an oval track. And they thought the best way to increase people coming to the fair would be start to have horse races. And so they decided to develop a grandstand, and they looked for people in the region who could help promote it. And one of the people who was really interested in it was Bing Crosby. He was already very heavily invested in horse racing in other parts of our region, in particular Agua Caliente, which was a major racetrack in Tijuana. He was very, very instrumental in the development of that and thought that Del Mar could do just as well. And so he personally invested in it, and two other gentlemen were the creators of the Del Mar racetrack. And in 1937, they opened the first races here. So that was in July of 1937. Now, Bing Crosby wanted all the rich and famous of Hollywood to come here too, and so he would have special occasions for people to meet various celebrities, people like the Lucy Ball and Desi Arnaz were seen there quite often. And it's continued, you know, famous people have continued to come here. Angie Dickinson used to frequent here a lot. Paul Bacharach, is that how you say his? Yeah, he used to come here quite often too. So lots and lots of famous people have come. Bing Crosby, when they opened in July of 1937, he wanted everybody to see that he was heavily invested in the project and making sure it was a success, that he stood at the entrance gate and he greeted every single person that came in. Yep. And he did that for several years. He would be sure to be there at opening day. Now, there's another tradition that is part of opening day ceremonies. It's very, very popular custom, and that is the hats, right? Sally Tibbetts, who she was a philanthropist here in town. She and her husband very instrumental in helping a lot of different causes. But she would always attend opening day, and she thought that, yeah, it was great, you know, fun things to go and watch the horses and that, but she wanted it to be people to come in their best attire. And so she started to wear very elaborate hats to the opening day ceremonies. And eventually, other people really started to pay attention to what she was wearing. And they started to model after her and started to bring their own fashionable hats. And eventually, by 1958, it became a really, really popular custom for people to start wearing very unique and unusual hats. And that tradition continues today. So we have lots of milliners in the region do quite well for themselves as a result of having the hats. We have the racetrack gets started after the fairgrounds gets completed, but then World War I hit, World War II in the 1940s comes along, and during that time, the Del Mar Fair as well as the racetrack are shut down for a number of years. And the entire complex and the whole region of Del Mar and even La Jolla and things, it becomes a major military operation. There are several camps that are set up here, military training facilities, Camp Callan, we have Camp Matthews, and Camp Callan in particular was an anti-aircraft gunnery that was located just off of where the UCSD campus is today. So the military really took over this region, and it continued that way up until the time that the war ended. Del Mar has continued its focus on education, and that would come about in the 1960s with the UCSD campus, and it continues even into everyday life too. Del Mar is quite well known for its literary circle today, so lots of writers, lots of artists, lots of literary associations, and people who are reading books to know, manuscripts for future books and things, that all happens in this area too. So on the cultural forefront, on the entertainment and sporting forefront with the racetrack, and of course, still continuing our tradition of agriculture with the fair every year as well. So that's a short story of Del Mar and our region. Anybody have any questions? I'll give a few minutes for you to, if you have any questions. Yes, in the back.
Hi, I decided to go ahead and attend this part of the general session on San Diego history because I'm always learning something about San Diego.
Great.
Can you tell me a little bit about the street that runs along the rail, the racetrack, and how Via de la Valle got its name?
I'm sorry, I really don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry.
One more?
Yes, does Del Mar adjoin La Jolla, and how far from us is the UC San Diego campus?
Del Mar is connected to La Jolla, and from here to get to UCSD, it's about a 10-minute drive. So it's south of here, south and east of here. is the UCSD campus.
Oh, we got some questions here in the front.
You probably already know this, but on occasion the Del Mar advertisements would play a short clip from a record that Bing Crosby recorded, Old Del Mar. Alec, do you have that in your collection, I hope?
We do, yes. And thank you for mentioning that. In addition to ephemera, so like leaflets and pamphlets and things that are created for various occasions, we also have music clips. We have an extensive oral history project at the History Center, started as early as the 1880s. People were writing down and getting people's memories while they were still living here and still alive. We do have music clips, and we have musical instruments as well as part of our collection. We have the sheet music and things too, so yes. I think we're just about out of time. So thank you, everyone. It's been my pleasure to come in and talk to you today. Thank you.
There we go. Hello, 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 hello. I think I'm being heard, maybe. Hearing device, it's sometimes hard to tell a little bit. Thank you very much, Mr. Selek, and that was very interesting, and we could go on for a while. I noticed, by the way, that we're on El Camino Real here.
Yes.
And I live a block off El Camino Real in Mountain View up beyond San Jose, so I figured maybe I could just get on the 22 bus up there on El Camino Real and head on down here, but apparently not to be. But I gather that it was all originally the King's Highway that went all the way up. Well, again, thank you for that. We like our history here, especially us old guys.